Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Welcome into another episode of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, and we have a very good podcast for you today. Brian Scalabrine, Comcast Sportsnet, and of course, right here with us at the Vertical, he joins me, and we cover a wide range of topics, including why Scalabrine is so high on the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Well, first of all, you have length athleticism, which is the name of the game. You have guys that can defend multiple positions. Offensively, they can do a lot of different things. I think Middleton comes back. He fits that role perfectly. I'm fine with the Greek freak playing point guard.
And what has gone wrong with the Portland Trailblazers in the first couple of months of this season?
You know, Paul Allen's like, what should I do this offseason? And they're like, well, let's just pay some guys and let's make that next step. And now they're going backwards. He's not going to want to hear all the excuses, right?
All that and more next on the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. All right, before I get to my guest, Brian Scalabrine, Comcast Sportsnet, SiriusXM, and of course, colleagues right here at the Vertical. This is our last podcast for 2016. Strong run. I want to thank everybody out there that listens. We've had great numbers, improving numbers every single week, and we're looking forward to another 52-week run in 2017. We don't take any weeks off here at the Vertical Podcast.
You don't have the LeBron rest week?
There's no rest week. There's no injury week. There's no nothing. We go 52 all in.
Well, but wait a minute. You must be doing like a couple in a week sometimes, right?
You try to bank a couple.
All-star break, you got to be doing 20 of them, right?
All-star break is nice. You can get guys in a room for 20 minutes here or there. When they pass through New York, sometimes they even come in studio for you. So it's a nice tip. But all right, Scal, looking back on 2016, I think one thing is clear, and you brought this up before we went on the air. Cleveland and Golden State, head and shoulders better than everybody else.
And so the thing that stands out is both teams actually play good defense and both teams make shots over good defense. They are so far advanced. The Warriors are creeping up in defensive rating. The Cavs, obviously, with their lineups, when LeBron goes to the four, Kevin Love's at the five, they have versatility both ends of the floor. So, and then what stands out on that Christmas Day game is the shot-making ability of both teams. Like, it doesn't matter if you play good defense on Kyrie and he spins and Clay's all over him, he still makes shots. And these guys, like, I don't know if the landscape of the NBA is going to change for the next couple years.
Devil's advocate here, after watching the Christmas Day game and watching the last few games that Golden State played against Cleveland, should we be worried about Steph Curry in this matchup?
Maybe. Why? I don't get why he seems to play different with these guys. I loved Kevin Durant that game. And by the way, LeBron is I thought that he was going to, I don't know, where was he going to go for points with Kevin Durant's length? Man, knocked down all those three-pointers in the third. So I don't know what's the deal with Steph. And it's only going to get worse. J.R. Smith is another guy who's athletic, long, and plays him physical. So it'll be interesting to see. I still haven't found that the Warriors have gotten Steph Curry enough easy looks, which I thought that was going to happen. It seems like Klay Thompson's getting easy looks. Durant is also getting some easy looks. Where are the easy looks for Steph Curry?
You know what they all said before that game, Cleveland, Golden State, just know the game. They couldn't have downplayed that more. I mean, you've been on
great teams, Scal,
have had great matchups, whether it's the Celtics replaying the Lakers in the regular season the year after playing them in the finals. I mean, how full of shit are these teams and these players?
How about LeBron on that dunk? You know, he's swinging all over the place. You can't tell me he doesn't hate, while he dunked on Draymond Green, you can't tell me he doesn't hate Draymond Green. Man, if the league needs to do something, let me ask you, Chris, if they got rid of like East and West and like, can these guys play each other 10 times a year?
I mean, that would draw the best ratings. I mean, I'm worried about the playoff ratings in general, because there's going to be kind of an anticlimactic sense, because I don't think anybody can come within two games of either one of these teams in their respective conferences. But when we get to the finals again, through the roof, those ratings. Yeah. People are going to watch that. You saw what the ratings were on Christmas Day. People are going to watch these games in huge numbers.
The thing that's standing out on this one would be, How can you win a game against the Warriors? Can you push the Cavs to six games? I think there's going to be talk like that. I think if a team goes in there and gets swept by Cleveland, they'll be disappointed. If they take one, they'll be like, okay with it. They get two, they'll be, it's like almost like they won. Moral victories, I think that's going to be like that for the next 2 years. But those guys are head and shoulders above the rest of the league.
Yeah, I was talking to a couple of executives about when the playing field might be level. And one told me that it's going to be at least 2 years before the effects of the new CBA kind of take place, because you've still got guys that are on the old max contracts, great players on old max contracts, guys like John Wall and even Kevin Love that are now affordable contracts for their teams, because the cap is going to jump over $100 million in the coming years. So, you know, people, whether you like it or not, get ready for Cleveland Golden State for at least the next 2 to 3 years.
I think people are okay with that. Yeah. I just think, I wonder, like here in Boston, and I got another team, Milwaukee, out east, they got to be ready to strike in 2.5 years from now. That's when you have to be looking like, all right, this is time for championship level basketball. That's why I'm adamantly against making a trade right now to be marginally better. Just whatever decision you make, just think 2.5 years from now, and that will help you make your decision. Whatever that decision is, think 2.5 years from now, and that's when you want to be ready to strike. If, and that's only if, LeBron somehow ages and actually slows down a little bit, which I don't know if we've actually seen that.
Yeah, and there are a couple of teams in the East that are poised to follow that path. Boston and Milwaukee are at the top of that list. Let's talk about the Celtics for a second. Rough start to the season, but as we sit here a couple of days after Christmas, starting to turn things around a little bit. You get everybody healthy, and they're starting to look a lot like the team we expected them to be on both ends of the floor.
So this team is one of those teams where if you miss one guy, it really hurts what they're doing, because everyone has a role and no one really has to play outside of that role. I'm going to give you a crazy Isaiah Thomas. For all the superstars out there, he lets the game come to him. He relies on his teammates. He does false action to later on get the ball back. It's not just get out of my way and let me do it, or let me just run this high pick and roll. Brad is always dancing him around in different locations to get him so the defense can't get a steady diet against him. And along the way, guys like Marcus Smart the other night on Christmas makes a big shot. Jay Crowder makes a big shot. Al Horford in the fourth quarter making big plays. So I think that once you miss one of those guys, you could see that everyone gets pushed just a little bit, and that's why they struggled early.
Yeah, they still need somebody. They still need a piece in that mix to get above Cleveland into the mix for a championship. And look, this is, you know, my reading of the tea leaves in Sacramento is that if they can get owner Vivek Ranadive on board to trade DeMarcus Cousins, the two teams the front office want to get interested in a deal are Boston and Orlando. That they have the two, they have the most assets that are most appealing to that team. You're talking about maybe the most polarizing player in all of basketball in DeMarcus Cousins. Where do you stand on him? Would you take him on your team?
So I'm not, I don't care about like the drama and stuff like that. Like I've seen bad attitudes work out well. You know, it's happened many times, right? I'm just not sure, because DeMarcus Cousins will become a free agent at one point, and you're going to have to pay him 35% of your cap. And so Al, let's say he's at 30. I'm not sure that you want a team in today's day and age with you can't touch on the perimeter and not having a big-time wing that can run pick and roll. Having two bigs at 65% of your cap is worth it. I don't think that that's going to help you get over the hump. Now, also remember, one of those guys might have to sit at the end of a game with everyone going small. So now it's fine. You make the trade and you have this and you pay this guy. Are you okay with $30 million, $35 million sitting on the sideline down the stretch? I'm not sure people are okay with that. So I just think in today's NBA, and unless it changes somehow, I don't know if I would go that direction. It had nothing to do with his ridiculous comments or any of that stuff. It just has to do with, I don't think you should put all your money into front court players right now.
But isn't Boston in a situation where they're going to have to take a risk soon? Because it's fine having this surplus of guards in the backcourt that are very good, but we're a year and a half away from the Piper having to come pipe, or for lack of a better phrase These guys are going to get paid. You know, Isaiah Thomas, he's been vocal about getting paid at some point. Avery Bradley's going to get paid. Marcus Smart's going to get paid. You mentioned you can't pay two bigs, 60% of your cap. You can't pay three or four guards that much either. I mean, they're going to run into a problem within a year or so as their guards and that money they're going to have to pay them.
Yeah, but then when, like, don't you deal with that problem when it comes? I think this summer.
But aren't those guys the most appealing right now? Just like Cousins, when you've got a year and a half left in their contracts. You've got Smart, you've got Bradley, and you've got Thomas with a year and a half left. That the same rule applies, I think, for those two guys.
That's why I think you go after a guy and you try to sign another max guy this year, right? If you have the cap space this year, it's okay. Isaiah's not Steph Curry, but just think, Steph Curry's making $11 million. Because he's making $11 million, you can go out and get Kevin Durant, right? So because you have low guys on your books, you can go out and be aggressive in free agency. And I mean, so this is what I would do. And this is not them telling me or anything like that. And I got to be clarify about this because I know how people are, but I would go after Gordon. I would not trade for anybody right now. I would go after Gordon Hayward. And then at that point, once that happens, if I get him, then I would decide what I want to do with these picks and everything like that. But until then, I still think you have to go out there and sign a max player. By getting right now, if someone said, would you trade for Gordon Hayward? People are like, yeah, you got to give up that Brooklyn pick. What if you can sign him as a free agent? That's a big time addition to your team without any subtraction. And then I think at that point, whatever the answers are, they'll be right in front of you. But instead of deciding beforehand, you don't know if you're going to get a guy like that. You don't know how your draft is going to work out. You know, Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley, it might not pan out that way in the future, depending on who you get.
That's where the backroom dealing would have to come in, because you'd have to get signals, smoke signals otherwise, from Gordon Hayward, his agent. I know people like to connect the Brad Stevens dots there. That's not real at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. But you have to be sure. Yeah. Quickly, what do you think about Hayward? Do you think he's worth the max deal you'd have to put in front of him?
Only because, so here's why I'd be a little bit wary, right? Give two Brooklyn picks and two guys for him and then give him a max deal. But in my opinion, because the Celtics are where they're at with the cap, just give him a max deal. You're getting him for free. It's an improvement on your roster, so you go out there and do it. You figure out the other stuff later. To me, it all comes down to Utah. Historically, they have not paid their guys. So are they going to give him 5 years, 160? Maybe they don't. At that point, you should try to strike. That's what I would do if I was them. I would not, until Cleveland shows me they're going to slow down, I'm poising for 2 years down the road, 2.5 years down the road. I'm not trying to make any emotional decisions. And I guess his draft is pretty good. Everyone says it. There's all kinds of franchise-changing guards. Now, are they all going to end up like that? We don't know, but I really like this draft. So with the draft and the free agents, that's the best way to build your team.
All right, Scal, you mentioned Milwaukee, and the Bucks are another one of those teams that's a good 2 years away, and we're being positive about that.
Yeah.
You're 2 years away from being a contender. A lot of length, a lot of young talents, young coach in Jason Kidd. Why do you think that a couple of years from now we might be talking about Milwaukee as a contender?
Well, first of all, you have length athleticism, which is the name of the game. You have guys that can defend multiple positions. Offensively, they can do a lot of different things. I think Middleton comes back. He fits that role perfectly. But for them, so if I was like NBA 2K or if I was playing fantasy right now and I could somehow get Russell Westbrook on that team, that would make that team a contender. Because I'm fine with the Greek Freak playing point guard. It's okay, but at the end of the day, I think having a legit scoring threat at that position when it comes to Giannis, I'm fine with, you can bring the ball up the court 30% of the time, 40% of the time, but don't tell me you're going to chase Conley, Isaiah Thomas through pick and rolls all game. Don't try to sell me on that bag of goods. I can say offensively you can bring the ball up the court. I'm fine with that, but the name of the game and being a championship caliber team is being able to defend a pick and roll. And unless you're just going to switch everything, which I'm not sure that's the way to go from that position, I want them to have a legitimate point guard. And how they get one, if they can get that position solidified. I mean, they have length, shooting. You know, I like how they cut bait on Carter Williams. I think that was a nice move just to get a serviceable Tony Snell that will be fine for them for years to come.
They whiffed on the Brandon Knight deal.
They did.
That hurt
them.
They
swung for the fences and missed. It's fine.
Yeah, but that felt to me like a budget thing. Like they didn't want to pay Brandon what Brandon was going to get paid, and they let money kind of dictate how they're going to build their basketball team. And I'm not sure you can do that. And then let's hope that they have something in Thon Maker. I mean, he's 2 years away at least from being something. I'm not sure he's going to be something. He was a lot of hype, but I'm not sure about the substance there.
Yeah, you know, I have no idea what he's going to become or not, but he does fit in with length and athleticism with their team. So that goes down to, are they going to be able to develop him? You know, it's you know, the work? Is he going to put the work in every day? Are they going to study what they want him to become and change him into that direction? So, you know, I'm not going to like write a guy off that has that much length and athleticism, but yeah. And where I stand on the Brandon Knight thing is Brandon Knight dominates the ball, right? So sometimes there's a little bit of addition from your other players by subtraction. You know, I like long-term, yeah, it'd be great to have Brandon Knight at that point, but I think that with him being there, I think it stunted the growth of the other players. Now that he was gone, those other guys were allowed to shine. So it's totally fine playing your young athletic guys, Parker, Giannis, and they get to play multiple positions, bring the ball up the court, put the ball in their hands versus having a guy like Brandon Knight at that point. But 2 years down the road, eventually you're going to have some type of point guard.
Who's the star on that team? Or who do you project as the star on that team? Can either is Parker
Freak.
Or
–
Yeah, is he a superstar though?
Freak is a superstar.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's going to be. I mean, right now, no. Right.
Right.
2 years down the road, yeah, I think so. Like, so let's go. Towns, Porzingis, Freak. Who's another guy?
Embiid.
Embiid, right? Yeah. Because of the way the game is played, the pick and roll, you can't touch guys on the perimeter. Freak has the best chance of being the best. Now, you know, like those other guys, they have their skill sets, their ability to shoot, and they can score down low. Yeah, I get it, but Freak, because of the way he can handle and play, he seems to me will be the guy that will impact winning the most going forward. Now, if those other guys have some guards around them, some big-time players around them, maybe the sky's the limit for them. But like, Freak doesn't need that.
Let me ask you about a team that is kind of DOA right now, but you know, 2 years down the line because of their location and because of who they have running their team, they could be back up. That's Miami and the Heat. And right now, they're one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference. They've lost a lot of close games over the last couple of months of the season, but they do have some talent there. And the star of that team, or at least he's going to be, is Hassan Whiteside. And I'm curious to get your thoughts because one of the biggest question marks I have about Miami is Hassan Whiteside a franchise player? I mean, he is 2 years basically into his NBA career. 2 years ago, around this time, he was a member of the Iowa Energy playing in the
D-League.
I mean,
right?
It's incredible. And I was down in Miami just last week and I'm watching him knock down 18 footers. I'm watching him throw in soft jump hooks. I'm watching DJ Augustine have his head in a swivel the entire game, wondering where Hassan Whiteside was. At the same time, there's been some steady criticism of him over the last couple of years. As well, where do you stand on Whiteside as a franchise player?
So I'm not sure that position anymore is what we thought of it, you know, 10 years ago. Unless you can, so Porzingis, Towns, Embiid, they all shoot threes. Okay, obviously Whiteside, he doesn't shoot threes, right? And maybe that's not part of the deal. He's a diver to the rim, and that's important. And believe me, you ask Goran Dragic, do you want Whiteside out there in a pick and roll? When two go to him, he can throw it up and he can dunk it home. Yeah, that's important. But I'm not a big, like, right in today's day and age, as physical as they allow you to be in the post and as non-physical as they allow you to be on the perimeter, I'm just not sure that having a center as your best player is the way to go. If you just think about the guard, just think, I love Anthony Davis. He can't win a game until Jrue Holiday comes back, right? Yep. And I think Anthony Davis is a flat-out stud. So, and that's just like simple A to B, right? If Anthony Davis is a stud and he can't win unless he has the lead guard, even if he drops 50, he can't win, then I guess lead guards is the way to go.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
Hi, boys and girls. It's Tony Kornheiser reminding you to subscribe and listen to my daily podcast, where we talk about everything from sports to politics to the impending animal revolution. And remember, you can listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play.
All right, out west, several stories. And we'll get to Golden State in a minute, but you just saw Oklahoma City come through Boston a week or so ago. I mean, we'll get to Westbrook, but I think it's remarkable that Oklahoma City is where they are right now. If you look historically at the teams that have lost franchise players, you look at Chris Paul in New Orleans, LeBron the first time around in Cleveland, Dwight Howard in Orlando, the aftermath of that loss to those teams, they cratered. They were awful. But Oklahoma City, despite not being a championship contender, is still right there, you know, well over 500 in the thick of the playoff mix. I think that's a credit not just to Russell Westbrook, but to the talent that Sam Presti and company have kind of accumulated over the last couple of years.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, they were a championship caliber team.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they were, what, three possessions away, and I would have been interesting to see them.
But remember, Miami was like technically a championship caliber team too when LeBron left. You know, they were, they had won like 60 games or something like that when LeBron left, and they fell off a cliff when he walked out the door. I mean, this Thunder team, their depth, it's remarkable.
I would like to see a little bit more shooting around him. And I don't know. You tell me. Did they win the Oladipo trade? Is that something that's going to pan out for them? Or is just Russell Westbrook so good it doesn't really matter?
I think they won the Oladipo trade.
Because of Sabonis?
I mean, Oladipo and Sabonis combined versus maybe just having one more year of Serge Ibaka before he asked for big money. I think that's a win. I think they, and I've written this, they'd love to get their hands on Rudy Gay. No question. He has been their top target for months now. And I think he'd fit in really well. That's the shooting, that's the scoring that they need on the perimeter.
Yeah, no one's factoring in Rudy Gay shifting to the stretch four, by the way. And that is what he's going to be the rest of his career, which, in my opinion, same thing as Carmelo and Rudy Gay. Both these guys, they're at threes, they're average. At the four, you're thinking, like, how am I going to guard this? I got to suck in and dive and protect against Steven Adams and then close out to Rudy Gay. And so Rudy Gay to stretch four, he clearly has enough length and size to play that position. The league's going smaller. I'm a big Rudy Gay fan, and I'm also a big Carmelo fan, both if they're playing the four. So it'll be interesting if they do grab him, and they can probably get him for pennies on the dollar, right?
Cameron Payne, probably, and maybe something else. Okay. You know, I think they wouldn't love to part with Cameron Payne, but I think they recognize that that's exactly what they need. I mean, it's hard. And you saw this in the Boston game. It's hard just dumping the ball into Steven Adams when teams kind of create a wall against him, knowing that the other side of the perimeter, they're not going to knock down shots. I mean, Rudy Gay is at least a threat to knock down shots consistently.
Yeah, it'd be interesting that they do get him. That it's just like, I have my own thoughts of where guys should go. Rudy Gay should go to OKC. To me, DeMarcus Cousins should go to Toronto. I want to see DeMarcus Cousins in Toronto. I want to see if he moves the needle or not. I've always, and it's almost like I'm rooting against all the people that hate on him. And I might be just one of those guys when he does those funny comments after the game. But I think Kyle Lowry and DeRozan, they're so solid that he can only help that team. You know, Valanciunas is fine. That's probably a solid move, but I would love to see him there. So I root for, like, the dysfunction to become functional.
That's interesting. I never thought of Cousins in Toronto. And he would be a needle mover there because they don't have much offense right now in that front court. And they badly need to balance that out a little bit. Their backcourt's great up front. Not so much. But sticking with Oklahoma City and with Westbrook, how is he able to do the things that he can do when every team, you know, plan A, B, and C is here's how we stop Russell Westbrook? He just continues to defy the odds every single night and score on you, despite the fact that he's the only consistent scorer out there.
You could have said that same comment in the 80s about Michael Jordan. Just literally just take out the comment. How do you stop Michael Jordan night in and night out when the whole team is trying to stop him and he still gets his? I think he's the closest thing to Jordan we've ever seen. I think he's more Jordan than Kobe because Jordan in the 80s, because of the motor, just a constant, relentless attack of going to the basket, you know, breaking through guys, his strength, his size. I mean, it's just you can't ever watch him play and not be entertained. It's got to be, besides Harden, who does it in a, like, amazing fashion, like, wow, can you believe how easy the game is for James Harden? Russell Westbrook is. Can you believe his motor and how he constantly attacks the basket and makes big shots? I mean, what we saw here in Boston the other night was an insane fourth quarter performance.
That's what I was going to ask you next. More impressive start to the year, Russell Westbrook or James Harden?
Both equally impressive.
I mean, Harden almost gets lost in the shuffle. I mean, how effortless he makes it. And he's not averaging a triple-double, but he's in shouting distance. He's right there.
Yeah, it's like his passing ability. You know what's cool about both those guys? Like in an age where everyone's like, I want to team up with other guys. And I'm not really down on that. Or I'm going to blame my teammates or I want to get out. They're like the opposite of that. I just want to hoop, man. If Russell Westbrook, Harden, they believe they can go to Philly right now and turn the thing around. You know, they don't care. You put me anywhere and I'm going to win. That's just how they think. And whoever my teammates are, these guys I'm going to war for, it's kind of refreshing, right? For all the hate that James Harden got last year, it's like the opposite of that, right? Shower the praises that he doesn't care who's on his team. He just hoops and cares about his guys.
And I tell you what, this has been kind of a renaissance for Mike D'Antoni too. I mean, I thought he was done. I mean, he takes the job on the bench in Philly, and I thought that was smart because you get yourself back into circulation a little bit, even on the worst team in basketball, and somebody was going to give you one more shot. And I know that's all Mike wanted. He wanted one more crack to prove that what happened in LA and even in New York was not him, that he could coach and he could be a coach of better teams. And lo and behold, even though they're still not defending at a high level, the fact that they're where they are right now, right in the middle of the pack in the Western Conference, I thought they'd be lucky, Scal, to get into the playoffs.
Agree.
That's it.
Agree.
And now they're right in the thick of it. And Mike has done to James Harden what he's done to so many other great players. Yeah. I had a head coach tell me a couple of weeks ago that he's ecstatic to have Mike D'Antoni back because he takes 25% of his offense comes from whatever Mike D'Antoni's running because he looks at Mike, he pulls the best up, they apply it to his team. That's how highly regarded Mike D'Antoni's offensive system is in this league.
Yo, he's one of these guys. Now, I don't fully understand this, and maybe because it's LA and New York, but he changed the game. He
changed absolutely.
The small ball. Warriors get a lot of credit for him, and they should get the credit for it. Mike D'Antoni changed the way the NBA is played now, and I knew it when I was going against him. And I have Boris Diaw in the corner and Amari Stoudemire coming down the lane and Steve Nash coming off the pick and roll. He's staring me right in the eyes, and I'm thinking, like, this is a messed up position for me to be in right now. If I go out there, this is going to be a dunk for Stoudemire. If I lean towards Stoudemire, it's going to be a three for Boris Diaw. And if I do nothing, Steve Nash just continues to stare at me until I move. It is so helpless as a defender. And I go home and I'm driving home and I'm talking to my wife. I'm like, what I just saw today, that is the hardest thing I ever had to do. I feel like I was on roller skates all day. Like, I could not get, like, oh, I'm going over here. Oh, I'm going over there. And it's all because of the way that he runs offense. Yet, guess what? Everybody runs spread, pick, and roll now. Everybody has the four lifted with the center coming down the lane. So, yeah, he does not get the credit he deserves. The showers of hate towards his, oh, this guy can't coach. That is such BS, man. I'm telling you, I've been out there. It is insane to guard that kind of action. And he got the perfect fit. I give Daryl Morey a ton of credit for going after the guy that fits his team. Not just the big name here or big name there. Who will go out there and coach the way I want to play? And that was a good fit.
And you think about it. I mean, the knock on Mike is that people say that kind of style can't win championships. Let's not forget, and I think it was 07 when the whole, you know, Steve Nash hip-checked against the board by Robert Horry led to the suspension of Stoudemire. That same year, the Spurs went back. They won the championship, swept through Cleveland. That could have been Phoenix. Had that not happened, that could have been Phoenix. And then the entire narrative around Mike D'Antoni is totally different.
Agree. Like one bad move, like a guy puts his toe on the line or on the court, and now his whole career is like, oh, that you can't win like that? I'm not sure you can't win like that. And I will say this. Listen, only one team's going to win a championship. And we started this podcast talking about Cleveland and Golden State. Who cares? If you compete with these guys, chalk it up as a good year.
All right, let's finish talking about a couple of disappointments out there, at least so far. And you start in Minnesota. Now, I know technically they're still in the playoff race.
They're trending, Chris.
That eighth spot is so bad. That eighth spot's what it used to be in the Eastern Conference when you could be like 36 wins and you're in. Now,
might be less.
Because Portland is so bad right now, and we'll talk about them in a second. But Minnesota, some people had them as high as the 4-5 seed in the West to start the season. Are these just predictable growing pains that Tibbs and the Wolves are going through, or is there something more at play here?
No one could predict the colossal meltdowns that the Timberwolves go through day in and day out.
Third quarters.
Oh, my gosh. It's so bad. But I think they're trending in the right direction. It's only a matter of time. Like, how do you believe, right? I believe you're a good coach and you have good players. It will eventually work itself out. Now, I expected them to be the eighth seed in the West, and I looked at everything and I said eighth. But it'll be. I did not expect him to blow like 19 point leads and 15 point leads late in the game and 12 point leads to Houston down in 4 minutes. Like, that, you can't ever predict that type of stuff. But I think they're trending the right direction right now. Will they make the playoffs? Huh, that AC is so bad right now. What is the deal with Portland?
I don't know, man. Like, you know, they may have overachieved a little bit last year, and I obviously Evan Turner has not had the impact that they hoped he would. I don't know that they're using Evan Turner in his best possible way. I thought here in Boston, Brad Stevens maximized Evan Turner, like gave him the ball with the second unit, the freedom to create kind of on his own and freelance at times. Now I watch him in Portland and he's playing off the ball a little bit more. And Evan Turner off the ball is I mean, frankly, not a very good player.
Yeah,
I mean, he's an average, you know, spot up shooter. You need him with the ball and a second unit kind of creating. And I think that's been the biggest issue. I mean, the injury to Al-Farouq Aminu early killed them, because Aminu, is maybe the most anonymous, important player in the NBA because of what he does defensively. Him being out, that forced Terry Stotts to just change his lineup like 15 times in the first 20 games or so of the season. So that hurt. But those two things have caused that team to be a massive disappointment.
Yeah, I don't understand what they're going to do. They have the third highest payroll in the NBA. You know, Paul Allen's like, what should I do this offseason? And they're like, well, let's just pay some guys and let's make that next step. And now they're going backwards. He's not going to want to hear all the excuses, right? He's going to be like, wait a minute. You told me if I pay these guys, we're going to win, and we're not winning. So, you would know more than I would. That tradable contract, can you trade Allen Crabbe now? Does Brooklyn, who gave him the offer sheet, which I know you have to wait like a year before you could do that, like, is anybody interested in those two contracts?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, Brooklyn, in some ways, Brooklyn's gotten lucky that Tyler Johnson's a pretty good player, but that's a lot of money, 50-plus million, that he was going to get from the Nets. And Allen Crabbe, that's the type of player that if you're the Blazers, and I know you want to try to keep your core intact, but if you think you can replace Allen Crabbe for somebody on the cheap and kind of keep your flexibility, that was a mistake. And really, I'd love to ask Terry Stotts and Neil Olshey and that management group just what they saw at Evan Turner as it related to their team. Because like we talked about, Evan was so good in a specific role here, not so much in other stops. I mean, flamed out in Indiana, whenever he was there, you know, was on those awful Philadelphia teams for a couple of years. You've kind of got to put Evan in a specific role. And right from the start, he hasn't been in that role up there. I mean, so they spent a lot of money on a couple of guys that really aren't helping them and have significantly damaged their flexibility moving forward.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what people think of Evan Turner when he was here. Now, I don't know how it works. I don't know if $17 million is worth it, not worth it, or what amount would be worth it. But when he was here, he was valuable. He helped winning. A lot of that had to do with Bradley being an off-the-ball player. Isaiah is also good off the ball. Maybe CJ and Dame just can't play off the ball. Maybe the fact that those two guys can't play off the ball as well, and they're already kind of hunting for shots, those two, then Evan Turner with the ball in his hands, it's like becomes like, why do I even have you out here when you're just going to stand in the corner?
All right, lastly, the Clippers. They'll be a top three seed. Doesn't seem to be any question about that. But you talk about where teams are trending, and you know, they're kind of right in that no man's land in some ways. Yeah, Blake is done for three or four more weeks. But even when he was back, that wasn't a close game they played against Golden State. I mean, we all know the contract situation with a lot of these guys coming up. I mean, what kind of position is Doc Rivers in right now with this group?
So I don't know how this thing is going to play out. But don't you sort of feel like whatever the answer is, it will present itself in the playoffs? If it's so here's the narrative, right? They go all the way to the Western Conference Finals and lose to Golden State. Do you give Chris Paul in Game 7? Do you give Chris Paul and Blake Griffin 5 years, $150 million each? I guess that's the answer. But if you...
Blake, there's no question. Chris, probably too. Yeah, I mean, I think the other question goes to a J.J. Redick. How much do you pay our pal?
Him too.
J.J.'s earned himself a big contract. Yeah. And while podcasting is lucrative for him, he does need to pay the bills in the NBA.
Love you, J.J., but yeah.
But if you're the Clippers, do you continue to boost that payroll into the 100-plus
million? I don't
know.
I think the answer will present itself. I don't know what they do. Now, what you're asking is maybe... Do you try to cut bait beforehand? Now, could you really cut bait on one of those two guys?
I can't see Doc doing it.
Either can I.
Because Doc didn't go to L.A. to rebuild.
No, I agree. But you can, like, why when one of them is out, they seem to do fine? As long as it's the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, when you get to the playoffs, I mean, I think they keep it together. I don't think they make any moves in February because they're still hanging their hat on the fact that the last few years, somebody's gone down. And that's what's sabotaged their postseason run. I think Doc would love to see what this group looks like, fully healthy going into the postseason. I don't think anybody beats Golden State, but it's going to be a tough offseason for Doc and that crew if they go down in, say, four or five games in the second round again.
Yeah, you just got to pay them. I mean, the only way... You don't if you have a catastrophic meltdown. If you do what you did against Houston 2 years ago in the first round, you know, then you just like, all right, fine. We got to figure out what we're going to do. But if they show, which if you watch them play when they're all locked in and ready to go and they show they're really good, they show, I don't see how you don't pay them. I think you just have to. And it's like you think hey, 1 year maybe someone will get hurt and it'll be our year. I guess that's what the narrative for those guys is. But I think that whatever it is, I think the answer will present itself. in April and May.
Scal, I appreciate it. Those Santa Scal stuff still up there? Are we still posting those on thevertical.com?
They're out there a little bit. I called some people out.
Still have that outfit? Did they supply that? Did you bring that from
home? That's my outfit. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of short.
Happy holidays, man. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Chris.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Brian Scalabrine for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes of this podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, leave a comment, give us a rating. You know I appreciate it. Also, make sure you check out The Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick and The Vertical Podcast with Woj. And I'll see you next year.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.